dancing she had been performing beforehand had left her MP in a rather dire state. Thankfully, she had just the thing to address both problems. A metallic clunk came from within her torso, followed by quiet, rhythmic clacking noises reminiscent of large gears one might find in a clock tower. Fizzy immediately flew into action and dashed to her left, cleanly avoiding the cryomancer's ice beam. The man was both shocked and impressed that she was able to dodge his spell so easily. As its name implied, this magic moved nearly at the speed of light. It would only miss its target if they moved out of the way the moment the incantation was complete or if the caster's aim was off. The seasoned Imperial veteran felt confident that this particular instance was the former case. Undeterred, the cryomancer kept launching shards of ice at his target while she ran in a zigzag pattern towards his general direction. However, none of his spells connected, not even those covering a wide area. To the man's mounting surprise, the anomalous metal golem kept using holy magic on herself as she sprinted at full speed. It was an act that defied common sense, and not only because an actual monster was freely wielding divine power. The mind literally didn't have the leeway to do much else when casting a spell. One could maybe take a step or two to adjust their position, but sprinting across a littered battlefield while dodging incoming attacks was completely out of the question. The human spellslinger steeled his resolve. He would not allow himself to be intimidated by this freak. He still had the advantage. Not only was he the metal golem's natural enemy, but she seemed to lack the ability to attack him from a distance. Actually, that wasn't quite true. The cryomancer noticed what appeared to be a modified hand crossbow dangling from her hip. The weapon was fitted with a long metal tube where the bolt would usually be loaded, and its firing mechanism had been altered somehow. Furthermore, the device's owner had a bunch of narrow metal cylinders strapped to her thighs. The cryomancer hazarded a guess that they were ammunition for that strange weapon. The mithril golem confirmed the man's suspicions when she expertly loaded one into the tube bow.
Wind wall!
The cryomancer kept his cool and invoked a defensive spell. Just as expected, the monster shot that bulky projectile at him. The powerful updraft he conjured managed to sweep it up and fling it into the air, far away from him. He was thankful it was lighter than it looked, otherwise it would have hit him. Plus, given how it exploded in a plume of smoke and shrapnel somewhere in the distance, it was probably a very good thing that he avoided it. If this was all the golem could throw at him, he was in the clear. He only had to keep his cool and steady his aim. Since her improvised grenade launcher didn't work, Fizzy had to try something new. She couldn't close on the cryomancer just yet, so she raised a hand towards her dropped weapon and activated the magnetize skill. The lump of metal encased in ice suddenly flew towards her. Once the wrench, or rather the ice covering the wrench, was glued to her palm, the golem shifted her arm so that it pointed towards her opponent. She stopped pulling with magnetize and instead pushed, sending the wrench flying towards the cryomancer's upper body. It flew straight through the wind wall, its mass too great for the curtain of air to handle.
Crystal shell!
The magic user kept his guard up and immediately responded with one of his job's trademark defensive spells, which conjured a thin bubble of transparent ice around him. Although it looked incredibly fragile at a glance, it had more than enough defensive power to deflect that incoming projectile. Just as he expected, even though it smashed into his barrier with great force, it wasn't nearly enough to break through. In the next moment, the incendiary grenade attached to the back of said projectile exploded, enveloping the shell in flames. Non-magical fire couldn't trump magical ice, however. The crystal shell effortlessly repulsed the damaging effects of the rampaging flames, even though the highly flammable substance inside that grenade stuck to its surface. The flames died out almost immediately, but the ones that landed on the ground in front of him were a different matter. The rampaging inferno burned bright, which combined with the smoke it raised from the damp grass to obscure the cryomancer's field of view. The human correctly guessed this was a distraction intended to cover the little golem while it got closer, but he wouldn't let that lump of scrap have her way so easily. He pulled 5 prepared spell crystals from his belt pouch and activated them with a keyword. After cooking them for a second or two, He disabled his barrier and threw them haphazardly in the general direction he expected his opponent to be. In the next instant, his world was dyed white. The flames around him were doused. Bitingly frigid winds whistled past his ears, and the air was filled with ice and snow to the point where the morning sun was no longer visible. The five localized snowstorms caused by his precasted whiteout spells had merged into one gigantic blizzard. Unlike the actual blizzard spell, this one focused on restraining the movements of all caught within rather than showering them with shards of jagged ice. Your target is pelted by snow and ice. Target HP minus 416. You feel a strong chill. HP minus 17. Yet, it still caused extraordinary damage. As expected, no matter how skilled or powerful a monster was, none of them could fight against their bane. That golem might have been able to cleanse herself out of the magically induced frostbite earlier, but she couldn't use that spell fast enough to fight off five whiteouts worth of freezing. She would surely succumb to the snowstorm's cold embrace in seconds, rendering her incapable of moving so much as an eyelid. She had no hope of surviving, let alone escaping such extremely unfavorable conditions. Your target is pelted by snow and ice. Target HP minus 431. You feel a strong chill. HP minus 16. The cryomancer, on the other hand, was almost completely unscathed. He had access to a special skill called Sculpt Magic, an ability available to most offensive caster jobs at level 45. It allowed the user to create pockets of safety within the effective area of certain spells that drastically reduced damage dealt. The intent was to limit the amount of friendly fire during magical bombardment, although altering spells this way also significantly increased their MP cost. That wasn't a concern for this particular cryomancer because he had stored the magical energy within spell crystals just before the skirmish had started. Thanks to that bit of preparation, all he had to do to claim victory against the strange golem was to chill in place while his opponent got chilled into the grave. Your target is pelted by snow and ice. Target HP minus 440. You feel a strong chill. HP minus 16. At least, that was how things should have gone, and the updates he received every few seconds supported this way of thinking. However, his confidence waned when he spotted a strange blob of light within the multi-layered whiteout. He sharpened his glare and turned towards it, ready to act the instant he had clear sight of the enemy. At first, the man worried whether his powers of perception would prove sufficient, but such concerns were dashed moments later. He would have to be legally blind to not notice the eyesore of a golem charging straight at him. Fizzy's body had heated up to the point where her pure white plating glowed several shades of bright orange. Any snow or ice that made contact with her flamboyant frame instantly evaporated into puffs of steam that were swept away by the localized snowstorm. The crop top, baggy pants, and heavy boots she was wearing must have been ridiculously fireproof to withstand the sweltering heat coming off of her. The same could be said of the bandolier across her chest and the pouches strapped to her hips, although their contents did give out a bit of ominous smoke. The enormous red wrench was still in her grip, although it looked like it would melt away before long. Though the unnatural heat allowed her to fight off the paralyzing effects of the cold, it also played havoc on her body. Bits of her plating were coming loose, her left arm had a weird bend to it, her right eye was stuck in place, and a trail of red-hot liquid dribbled out of the corner of her madly grinning mouth. Becoming a walking furnace did nothing to resist the damage taken from the cryomancer's magic. Though she could somewhat mitigate the debilitating effects of her bane, it was impossible to fully nullify them. Such a weakness was the price monsters paid for being tougher, stronger, faster, and sometimes smarter than the enlightened. Thankfully for the Imperial caster, it seemed as though the superheated construct was blinded at the moment. She appeared to be heading straight for the cryomancer at first, but she abruptly changed direction. She hadn't spotted him quite yet, even though he could easily make out her shape. The disparity in perception was mostly due to the fact that she was lit up like a bonfire, whereas her opponent was not. The man was momentarily stunned by the sight and failed to take advantage of the situation. That smoldering silhouette resembled a vile demon straight out of his nightmares, It even looked like it had horns, although those were just Fizzy's deformed pigtails. Your target is pelted by snow and ice. Target HP minus 437. You feel a strong chill. HP minus 15. To the cryomancer's continued fortune, the next mental update he received served to snap him back to his senses. He immediately took action. He held up his right hand and started preparing a spell. A meter-long, icy needle formed out of thin air and floated above his open palm. The magic let off a soft blue glow that rapidly grew brighter as the man-made frigid environment raised its power. This combination of spells was a favorite of the cryomancer's, and with good reason. He was confident this empowered attack would be strong enough to pierce the golem's torso. Doing so would severely damage her or even instantly kill her if he managed to nail her core. That wasn't even accounting for her superheated state, which most likely rendered her mithril plating softer than usual.
Ice spike!
He sent the deadly icicle flying with a throwing motion of his hand. It shot through the snowstorm, leaving a blue trail as it flew unerringly towards the orange blob's center of mass with great speed. However, Fizzy's Champion of Chaos skill saw it coming and predicted its trajectory with an illusory red line that only she could see. The smoldering paladin pivoted on her left leg, twisted her body around, and performed a backhanded swing with the nigh-indestructible shield on her left hand right into the path of the incoming projectile.
Rebound!
She expertly bounced the spell back toward its source. A few moments later, her fine-tuned hearing detected a delightfully painful scream. She wasn't sure where that special snowflake was in this infuriating snowstorm, but the moron willingly revealed himself just as she hoped he would. Before doing anything else, she took a brief moment to top herself off.
Holy light!
Your body freezes over. HP minus 414. Divine power has healed your wounds. HP plus 941. Her heavily damaged body instantly mended itself. The loose bits snapped back into place, the warped metal regained its shape, and her jammed right eye unstuck itself. Her molten drool remained, however, revealing that the burst of healing magic was more of a patch job than a fix. Indeed, the internal state of her body was a hot mess on the verge of collapse. Her condition was volatile, to say the least, though Fizzy had willingly inflicted it upon herself. You suffer internal damage from Engine of Destruction. HP minus 184. You gain magical power from Engine of Destruction. MP plus 60. Her latest metal golem skill was doing good work, but the toll it took on her steadily grew stronger. Fizzy's body temperature continued rising even though she waded through snow and ice. But she wasn't worried. Mithril could withstand much greater temperatures than this. The only reason she looked so battered was because the living metal did not react well to the conflicting elements it was subjected to. Either way, Fizzy was slightly worried her own skill might turn her into a pile of molten slag, so she wasted no time chasing after her target. The fact the magic he conjured was still ongoing proved that he hadn't quite killed himself with that ice spike. Seeking to amend that oversight, Fizzy turned in the direction of his voice and launched herself at him with armored charge.
Crystal Shell!
The cryomancer had managed to rebuild his defensive barrier right in the nick of time. The smoldering golem slammed into it shield first as if she were a meteorite. The shock from the impact rattled and cracked his bubble, causing his body to feel the recoil. This only aggravated the immense pain coming from his right leg. The man stifled a yell through gritted teeth as his ice-impaled limb throbbed angrily. He expected that this golem, who for some ungodly reason was also a paladin, might defend against his ice spike with rebound. However, the way she sent it flying back at him was absurd. He had fought quite a few mason shield-wielding paladins and warriors before, most of whom used the defensive martial art to deflect his spells. Not only had none of them turned his own magic against him, they hadn't even come close. Such a feat should have been possible only in theory. That was the common sense the cryomancer had been armed with. Yet the frozen, oversized needle lodged in his thigh was undeniable proof that his assumptions were wrong. He couldn't begin to fathom how the golem managed to pull that off, while being partially blinded by a snowstorm, no less. The man had no time to calmly analyze the absurdity that had taken place. There were more pressing matters to attend to, such as the incredibly angry golem slamming her partially molten weapon against his crystal shell. He ignored both the shooting pain in his leg and the unnerving wide-eyed smile of his opponent as he concentrated on his defenses. He pumped MP into the icy barrier to seal those cracks before the lunatic on the other side could break through. Some part of him hoped his whiteouts would finish the job, but the divine radiance enveloping the crazy golem every now and then made it clear that wasn't going to happen soon, if at all. Fizzy stubbornly struck the crystal shell yet again, but the man inside restored it as quickly as she damaged it. The trapped cryomancer searched desperately for a way out of the situation, but his options were severely limited. Potions weren't going to help since he was already on the brink of potion poisoning due to the protracted battle. His leg wound made it impossible to either run or use ice slide to make some distance between him and his pursuer. At the very least, his MP was in a good state, so his only hope was to maintain his defenses until his allies came to his aid once the whiteouts dispersed. It was either this or relying on the vague hope that the enraged golem would run out of steam before he did. Unfortunately for him, Fizzy had no intention of turning this into a war of attrition. She reached into one of her flame-retardant pouches and grabbed a molten fistful of grenades. Her opponent's eyes went wide when he realized those were the same explosive devices she used against him earlier. She slapped them against the crystal shell, pressing them against it with her left palm while gripping her weapon of choice in her right hand. The golem invoked her divine wrath ability for good measure, and the damage-boosting skill manifested itself as a radiant halo of holy light just above her head. She raised the red-hot hunk of steel over her right shoulder as she wound up for one of her new favorite moves.
Grand Judgment Slam!
The cryomancer's thoughts of survival completely ground to a halt when he witnessed the impossible up close and personal. Time slowed down as he stared blankly at the full swing coming from his right and the oversized flounder of light swinging from his left. A single person combining a martial art with a spell? How was such a thing even possible? The corners of his mouth twisted into a self-mocking smirk as he realized his own folly. He saw the potential for this less than a minute ago, but common sense dismissed it before he could even consider it. He had picked a fight with a tired, battered metal golem, thinking it would be an easy win. Yet in reality, he never stood a chance. He closed his eyes as his final thoughts drifted to his hometown and the bar tab he never got around to paying. Fizzy's weapon and spell struck from both sides of the crystal shell just as her body heat set off her explosives. The assault's combined force smashed the barrier to pieces, reducing the man inside to a mangled, unrecognizable pile of meat. Thankfully, those were the last grenades the golem was carrying, or else she would have been enveloped in an explosive chain reaction. Not that it would have done serious damage to her. The ordnance she usually carried was a mix of fragmentation, incendiary, and poison. None of those could seriously harm her mithril hide in the event that they went off while still on her person, but they would certainly mangle anyone standing within 10 meters of her. The sorry state of the meat bag in front of her was a testament to that. Bits of him were even stuck to Fizzy. This was a transgression worthy of extreme punishment, but she graciously forgave his sin in light of his contribution to her status. Level up! Congratulations, you are now a level 33 metal golem. Strength plus 3, endurance plus 3, agility plus 2, faith plus 1. Proficiency level increased. Parallel plot is now level 2. Luck plus 4, intelligence plus 2. She chuckled.
A flounder came out. A fucking flounder!
Her sporadic, high-pitched laughter drowned out the hiss of searing flesh as the cryomancer's bits were rapidly vaporized by her superheated frame. It was a show of unrestrained joy that no sane person would openly exhibit. least of all after ending another's life in such a gruesome way. Then again, Fizzy wasn't exactly a person anymore, although a tiny fragment of Corny Fizzlesprocket remained somewhere within her after her initial transformation into a golem. Her last rank up had completely stamped it out. The only thing left in her empty shell of a head was a twisted, high-functioning psychopath that barely kept her violent urges in check around others. Well, that and her newly acquired companion.
I don't think it was that funny,
she interrupted herself.
The guy was fishbone slapped to death,
she snapped back.
In what way is that not funny, you insufferable cunt? Hey now, there's no need for that. Also, you should probably turn off the engine now. Oh, right.
After briefly arguing with herself, Fizzy finally deactivated one of the key skills that made her victory possible. Engine of Destruction pushes the golem's physical shell beyond its recommended stress limits. Requirements: level 30 metal golem, advanced joints, endurance 180. Type: sustained. Activation time: 6 seconds. Cost: 0 MP. Range: self. Effects: increases the amount of heat produced through friction of motion by 2000%. Recovers MP equal to 25% of the base damage caused by this skill. Reduces damage taken from this skill by 5% per level of this skill. Increases the MP recovered by this skill by 10% per level of this skill. As an artificer with smithing experience, Fizzy was able to identify a few unlisted benefits of the skill before she even picked it up. The heat prevented disruption to her internal mana circulation caused by extreme cold, effectively nullifying the paralysis she'd suffer if her bane was exploited. It had offensive applications when it came to hand-to-hand combat, though heating her wrench up through skin contact was also an option. She could even use her metallopathy skill to facilitate a more efficient transfer of thermal energy between her mithril hands and the enchanted lump of steel. Of course, these were simply an addition to its primary function of rapidly regenerating MP at the expense of HP. This was quite a hefty downside. The skill wreaked havoc on her internal construction since a metal golem's insides were filled with mechanisms that could easily malfunction when warped by heat. After using it several times, Fizzy fully understood why Engine of Destruction had the advanced joint skill as one of its prerequisites. The sturdier and more flexible means of motion she had acquired from that ability were far less likely to jam or seize up due to damage than the joints she had before. In fact, her old parts would have completely broken within seconds. That said, even the upgraded ones would suffer if she allowed herself to run too hot. There were ways to counteract this self-destructive nature. One of them was to increase her resistance to fire through skills and equipment. This reduced the damage her frame sustained without negatively impacting the magical energy generated by the Engine of Destruction. The line about base damage in the ability's description referred to this, and it was one of the reasons Fizzy wore gear sewn from the hide of a magmander. The monster in question was a horse-sized species of lizard that dwelled in active volcanoes. The reddish leather harvested from those beasts was nearly impervious to heat and slightly increased the fire resistance of anyone wearing it. The second trait was certainly useful, but the first one was the primary reason Fizzy had chosen it. Before she had this set made, the golem would burn through her clothes with alarming regularity. It was extremely inconvenient to find a new outfit after every fight, though not because it left her naked. If anything, she preferred being in the nude. Not having any pesky apparel in the way made it possible for others to witness her radiant splendor in its full glory. However, Fizzy had to keep her exhibitionistic tendencies in check for two important reasons. The first was that Boxy requested that she do her best to fit in with society, which necessitated the use of clothes. The second, more practical reason was that pockets, pouches, and holsters were incredibly useful not only in everyday life, but also in combat. The artificer's brief but intense bout against that cryomancer perfectly illustrated the benefits of flame-retardant apparel. If not for their special container, Fizzy's handmade munitions would have surely been set off prematurely by her scorching body heat. That was another unlisted side effect of Engine of Destruction. Though it seemed rather minor and situational, Accidentally detonating her explosives was a far bigger concern than its self-destructive function.
Holy light!
That was because, unlike any other metal golem in existence, Fizzy was also a paladin. Her ability to heal herself allowed her to maintain a superheated state for an extended period of time, although not indefinitely. Though Engine of Destruction generated more than enough MP for her to heal herself through the damage it caused, the mounting heat led to a proportional increase in self-harm. During her experiments with the ability, the golem learned that her limit was around 2, maybe 2.5 minutes. However, that was in a controlled environment with no other hostile factors. In live combat, using the engine for more than 20 or 30 seconds at a time was extremely ill-advised. Or at least that had been the case before a certain someone showed up.
Look, Fizzy, it's clearing up.
Her mouth spoke without her consent.
It's so pretty.
Indeed, seeing the layered snowstorm dissipate from the inside was a somewhat spectacular sight. More importantly, at least in Fizzy's opinion, it did an admirable job of sufficiently cooling her off. Her frame returned to its usual white coloration and was no longer hot enough to damage itself, but retained enough heat to instantly turn the last fleeting snowflakes into puffs of steam. This being the case, Fizzy judged that the active assistance of her roommate was no longer required.
Parallel zero.
The keywords spoken in a dull monotone caused the greenish glint in her left eye to disappear along with that thing's control over her body.
Well, that was rude,
complained the voice in her head.
Could have at least given me a heads up before you cut me off.
Why should I?
Fizzy defiantly crossed her steaming arms.
I'm only letting you borrow it because you're useful.
Oh, come on. I deserve a little more consideration than that.
No, you don't. You're just a skill. The only consideration I owe you is when to turn you on and off.
Indeed, the golem wasn't talking to herself because she had gone crazy. Well, technically speaking, she had a whole wealth of traits that most people would consider mental disorders, but this wasn't one of them. The voice in Fizzy's head that sounded exactly like her former self was neither conjured by her fractured psyche, nor was it the malicious murmurings of a metaphysical miscreant. She was talking to a mental construct created through the acquisition of a rather spicy skill. Parallel plot. The voices in one's head can make for surprisingly capable allies. Requirements: level 35 paladin, champion of chaos, holy scripture. Type: sustained. Activation time: instant. Cost: 3% of max MP per second. Range: self. Effects: passively maintains parallel entities at all times. Allows any number of available parallel entities to control the body while active. Amplifies the effects of Champion of Chaos by 30% for each active parallel. Increases the MP cost of this skill by 100% for each active parallel beyond the first. Increases all MP recovery by 5% per active parallel per level of this skill. Creates a new parallel entity at level 1, 7, and 10 of this skill. Fizzy had difficulty accurately putting this parallel entity experience into words. It was almost like she was possessed by a slightly different, more optimistic version of herself. The parallel's assistance was a definite boon in combat because it could freely invoke magic through spells and active skills while Fizzy focused on melee combat and martial arts. Fully utilizing all her abilities at once turned the golem into an unstoppable powerhouse. With Engine of Destruction constantly recharging her MP and the parallel repeatedly healing her, she could outlast almost anything. It was an understatement to say that this combination of skills drastically raised Fizzy's odds at survival. However, the undeniably useful ability came with some unexpected psychological downsides. The voice sounded a lot like her younger, wimpier, meatbaggier self, which really rubbed Fizzy the wrong way. Not to mention, the mere thought of sharing her glorious mithril frame with someone else was irritating in its own way, even if that someone was technically herself. Still, even if the two of them argued, there were no real clashes of opinions, and they cooperated easily enough when push came to shove. Fizzy felt that Given enough time, they could probably find some sort of middle ground that both of them were happy with. In fact, now that she thought about it, the golem realized that it was perhaps for the best if she stopped thinking of that voice as just a skill and started treating it like an individual. Unbeknownst to Fizzy, she was incredibly fortunate that she was no longer a gnome. A parallel entity wasn't a blank slate conjured out of thin air, but a mock personality born from one's subconscious. The average person had all manner of doubts, worries, fears, and other nasty things tucked away at the back of their minds. How did others see them? Should they have done something differently in the past? Were their beliefs and morals truly righteous? When did they get so old? What would happen if they died tomorrow? Was it really worth it to get a divorce just because their spouse had atrocious morning breath? If such things were given an audible voice through a parallel entity, then the mind hosting it would surely suffer. This didn't even consider the mental stress of never having true privacy again. The mental degradation of a paladin of chaos was all but assured the instant they chose parallel plot. The only question was whether the process would take weeks, months, years, or decades. Such was the price the mortal mind paid in exchange for accepting the gifts of a deity as inherently unstable as Larry, the goddess of misfortune. Unless said mortal happened to be Fizzy. The shiny paladin had discarded such bothersome mental baggage along with her flesh. Though she despised the weakling she used to be with a burning passion, she unconditionally loved her current self with her entire being. Everything she did was right, and everyone who thought otherwise, besides Boxy, was wrong. Such was the warped perspective of a metal golem obsessed with themselves. A parallel spawned of such thoroughly egotistical and narcissistic thoughts had no choice but to develop a similar mindset while sharing the same body. As a result, both Fizzy and her new sister ultimately agreed on everything, even if their slightly divergent personalities clashed sometimes.
I mean, you have a point,
the parallel relented.
That said, I may be just a skill, but I have thoughts and feelings too. Or rather, those are the only things I have whenever you're not using me. So, like, the least you could do is be more polite to me.
That worked both ways, which was precisely why the golem couldn't help but reconsider her attitude upon hearing those words. So far, she had treated this secondary consciousness as some annoying interloper. But that was no longer how she truly felt. Over the short time they had been together, this parallel made no demands other than repeated requests to be treated fairly. More importantly, she supported Fizzy wholeheartedly whenever the golem accepted her aid.
I suppose we did make a pretty good team back there,
the paladin admitted.
You're right. I should be kinder to you. I mean, you're basically me, and nobody's more deserving of my grace than myself.
Yeah,
the voice cheered.
We're pretty reasonable when we listen to ourselves, huh?
Exactly,
the golem nodded.
There's just one thing that's been bugging me. You don't have a name, right?
It would certainly help Fizzy adjust her mindset if she stopped referring to the parallel as you or that.
Now that you mention it, no, I suppose I don't. I could use yours, but that doesn't feel right. As much as I am you, I am also me. Therefore, I would much prefer a name I could call my own.
My thoughts exactly, which is why I've decided to call you Plus.
Oh? Oh-ho! That works on so many levels! I shall gratefully accept this brilliantly clever name from myself, to myself, on behalf of myself. Way to go, me!
I am pretty smart, aren't I?
Yup. An absolute genius, I dare say.
Ahem.
The golem mimicked, clearing her throat.
Now then, Plus, I need to pay homage to Jordan while I have the chance. So do be quiet.
Aye, aye, Cap'n.
Don't call me that.
Too far?
Too far.
Right. Sorry. I'll shut up now.
Fizzy quickly surveyed the battlefield. Honestly speaking, it was more of a skirmish than an actual battle since both sides had only about 30 people. The region's dense pinewood forests forced the Imperial Army to slow their advance to a crawl as they steadily cut their way through the brush. The Republic's initial hit-and-run operations proved successful in delaying them even further. The rough terrain and dense foliage made it horribly impractical for anything larger than a platoon to traverse the rainy woodlands which worked in the defending nation's favor. They could strike at the enemy and retreat without fear of the much larger invading force earnestly giving chase. The Empire's leadership eventually realized this and started sending smaller, heavily armed units ahead of the main force. These scouting patrols formed a wide security perimeter, greatly reducing the mobility and effectiveness of the Republic's guerrilla tactics. The elves, in turn, momentarily gave up on hindering the main force or their supply lines and instead focused on thinning out enemy numbers by ambushing as many advanced troops as possible. It was as close to a fair fight as they were going to get, so they tried to make the most of it. Unfortunately for them, the Empire's soldiers on the Eastern Front had grown familiar with all of their tricks. Not only that, but their crushing defeat at Fort Yemen served as a wake-up call. Although they were still confirming the details of what exactly happened in that massacre, the Lodrak Empire's top brass ordered the field commanders to put caution above all else during their advance through the rainy woodlands. As a result, although many ambushes succeeded, an equal number of them failed, and when an ambush was thwarted, the situation rapidly deteriorated into an all-out brawl. That was exactly how this particular skirmish started. Under normal circumstances, the Empire would have had the upper hand in open combat with equal numbers, but Fizzy's presence tipped the scale in the elves' favor. After all, she took down 3 significant threats and at least 7 more soldiers all by herself. At that point, it was only a matter of time before her side emerged victorious, although the humans probably didn't realize that quite yet. The dense forestry obscured vision, making it difficult to confirm the status of allied combatants. This problem was exacerbated whenever the fighting broke up into a loose collection of smaller scuffles scattered throughout the area. That had been the case with Fizzy's unit, which was why she didn't have any hostiles within her immediate surroundings. The paladin seized this chance and knelt with her hands together, then offered a brief yet sincere prayer to the God of Variables. She started as she usually did, thanking Clara for her mithril body, which wouldn't have come to her were it not for her guiding hand. Next, she praised Alberto for the artificer job, which allowed her to gain unparalleled understanding of said glorious frame. She exalted the goddess of happenstance for granting a pitiable creature like Corny Fizzlesprocket the privilege of being a champion to such a simple yet infinitely complex deity. She also expressed gratitude for the miraculous combination of jobs that, despite her preconceptions, worked together harmoniously and efficiently. Fizzy was a perfect working example of the whole being greater than the sum of its parts. In some ways, she considered herself the crowning achievement of her own career as an artificer. Above all, the golem thanked Peter for her current lot in life. She was confident, strong, and had someone that considered her irreplaceably precious. It didn't matter to Fizzy if this outcome was a direct result of her deity's influence or whether it was all blind luck. She wouldn't be bothered if something else entirely was behind the chain of events leading to her present situation. Whichever the case, it was crystal clear that if anyone deserved gratitude and reverence, aside from Boxy, herself, and maybe her other self, it was Krusty, the god of instability.
And let thy toast never fall buttered side down. Cheesecake.
A special action has been performed. Faith plus one. Luck plus one. After ending her prayer in a somewhat unorthodox manner, Fizzy received a silent confirmation that her words of thanks were both heard and appreciated. The fact that she had gotten not one, but 2 attribute boosts showed that Tortuga was extremely pleased with her devotion. This, in turn, raised the paladin's own spirits. The golem opened her eyes and stood up. Her fully restored and smoking hot mithril body glittered radiantly in the morning sun. She put her shield-bearing side forward, threw her deformed wrench over her shoulder, and scanned for what was left of the Empire's unit. Her sharp ears heard what sounded like 2 rangers trading arrows just 30 meters ahead, behind some slightly burning bushes.
"Now then,"
she mumbled to herself.
"Let's go find the sorry sack of fuck that dared to shoot me in the bumper."
"Yeah!"
Plus cheered. then paused for a second.
Wait, bumper? I mean my ass.
The golem's eyes did a roll.
Oh, right. Let's get him!
While the moment was thoroughly ruined, it wasn't as bad as the uppity meatbag's face would soon be. General information. Corny Fizzle Sprocket. Metal Golem. Mithril. Female. 22 years old. Member of Hammers of Horkensaft. Level 58 Arclight Artificer. Level 36 Paladin. Level 33 Metal Golem. 1,974 out of 1,974 HP. Plus 3.1 per second. 1,105 out of 1,105 MP. Plus 1.8 per second. Attributes. Strength, 399. Dexterity, 195. Agility, 148. Endurance, 315. Intelligence, 221. Wisdom, 187. Perception, 157. Faith, 146. Luck, 51. Arclight Artificer Skills. Clockwork Expertise. Level 10. Max. Explosives Handling. Level 8. Deconstruction. Level 7. Optics Expertise. Level 5. Physics. Level 7. Component Forging. Level 9. Tick Counter. Level 6. Upgrade. Level 5. Electrical Expertise. Level 3. Paladin Skills. Champion of Chaos. Level 10. Max. Toughness. Level 10. Max. Strength of Faith. Level 10. Max. Holy Scripture. Level 9. Divine Wrath. Level 7. Bone Crusher War Art. Level 4. Parallel Plot. Level 2. Metal Golem Skills. Heavy Metal. Level 10. Max. Armored Charge. Level 7. Advanced Joints. Level 6. Magnetize. Level 4. Engine of Destruction. Level 2. Other Skills. Metalopathy. Level 6. Mentor. Level 3. Dagger Mastery. Level 4. Shield Mastery. Level 9. Holy Mastery. Level 11. Mace Mastery. Level 12. Spells and Martial Arts. Holy Spells. Holy Light. Consecrate. Cleanse. Judgment. Other Spells. Parallel 0. Parallel 1. Bone Crusher War Arts. Grand Slam. Shield Wall. Heavy Gong. Rebound. Part 2. Three people stood at the foot of a 5-meter-tall stone wall. They wore matching gray uniforms with black lining, which signified their shared allegiance to the Republic despite their disparate races. The one in charge seemed to be the dwarf. His greasy black hair was tied in a ponytail and a marvelous beard covered the vast majority of his face. At a glance, it was obvious he groomed the latter with much more care than the former. His eyes were closed and his ear was against the wall as he tapped the rock several times with a small mallet. He shuffled about 10 paces to the right and repeated the process. This went on for almost half an hour. When he was done with his inspection, he put away his mallet and frowned deeply, though one could hardly tell from all that beard in the way.
"Is something the matter, Mentor Boneshatter?"
The elf man with lime-green hair seemed to notice the short one's disapproval.
"Yeah, something's the matter,"
the dwarf went off on him.
"I'm getting tired of seeing shoddy construction like this. It pains me to think all that hard work and quality material wouldn't even last a decade before it fell over on its own."
His pointy-eared apprentice scratched his neck nervously while the female, blonde-haired gnome rolled her blue eyes in exasperation.
"This again, you old fart?"
she raised her voice.
"Even I can tell they did an amazing job given the short notice. You need to be more respectful of other people's circumstances. They might not have a decade."
"Pfft,"
he scoffed.
"As if a pipsqueak artificer like you could understand an architect's work. Go get a real job, then we'll talk."
"I think I'll pass. Your real job clearly left you in a state of dementia. Too much breaking boulders with your forehead, I bet."
Still a better use for the old noggin than thinking up that faulty junk you keep making.
Faulty junk?
Seeing as the argument was going somewhere quite unproductive, the elf inserted himself into the situation.
Friends, please.
He stood between them.
Calm yourselves. How many times are we going to go over this pointless squabbling? We're all on the same side here.
The dwarf and the gnome glared at each other around the much taller elf's waist. Although inappropriate from a professional standpoint, the friction between them was only a matter of course. Professionally, architects and artificers almost never saw eye to eye. Even though both vocations required precision and planning, the scale and direction of their respective fields were completely different. Architects were responsible for coordinating hordes of workers as they put together structures of all shapes and sizes. Shacks, houses, mansions, castles, even sewers and underground mines. All were touched by the hand of a skilled architect if they hoped to stand the test of time. Or in this case, the test of war. It was a noble and necessary calling that some considered the backbone of civilization. There was no greater honor for an architect than creating a monumental work of art that would stand proudly for generations to come. Artificers were on the opposite end of the construction spectrum. They worked day and night locked in their workshops to create intricate, delicate, and complex mechanisms. Unlike brick and mortar, meant to be as still and sturdy as possible, an artificer's gadgets often had fleeting existences. Their creations stood the test of time not by simply existing, but through the ideas and concepts that went into their design. Knowledge that, fortune permitting, would guide and inspire others to keep turning the wheel of progress. In short, architects valued stability, whereas artificers sought innovation. Arguments between experts in those two fields were extremely common, though it wasn't just these two vocations that had such a bumpy relationship. Most individuals considered their choice of job something personal, intimate. It was more than just a means of earning a living or a bunch of points and words on their status. For the enlightened, their job reflected their desires, talents, and goals. Admittedly, not all had the luxury of choosing, but even those forced to take up a vocation against their will would end up holding certain views and opinions that lined up with their job. As such, it was inevitable that people would be at odds with one another purely because of their profession. The most egregious example was the relationship between priests and necromancers. They were mortal enemies at worst and hostile acquaintances at best. Warriors and berserkers, on the other hand, scoffed at each other's fighting methods, while bards and artists argued over whose artistic medium was a superior means of self-expression. Wizards and warlocks likewise butted heads over what constituted as appropriate levels of destructive force when it came to their magic. Curiously enough, pyromancers and cryomancers were a poetic case of opposites attracting and got along like a house on fire. Obviously, there were exceptions to these stereotypes on an individual level, but those were few and far between.
I suppose it can't be helped if the quality isn't up to my standards,
the dwarf relented.
That's what I've been saying,
the gnome pouted.
Your standards are just too damn high, old man.
You're one to talk, Jesse.
The elf smirked.
I hear your guys complaining about how you make them redo their work because it's not good enough.
Well, it can't be helped. Shoddy artificer work is the type of thing that gets people killed.
It's the same with architects, you know. I'm sure you'd rather not have your house fall down on you while you slept.
Obviously not. But if I had to choose, I'd much rather a building collapse on me than be at the receiving end of a faulty tree trimmer.
She shuddered.
Whatever. My verdict still stands.
The dwarf slapped the wall.
I'm ashamed to have my name associated with this hack job.
Look, Master Boneshudder, can we forget about 10 years from now and focus on the next few weeks? The Empire's almost at our doorstep.
The dwarf looked up and down the wall encompassing the southern half of the city of New Whitehall. It was the last line of defense within the Rainy Woodlands, otherwise known as the Eastern Front. It was the nerve center of the entire region, which meant that if the city fell, then the entire province would follow, striking a serious blow to the Republic's war efforts. Boneshudder wholeheartedly agreed with his long-eared apprentice and blonde-haired advisor that the imminent danger was a far more pressing matter. However, He failed to accurately communicate why he was so adamant about the fortification's longevity.
Look, I feel like you're not getting my point,
he tried to explain himself.
If this glorified fence can't stand for 10 years on its own, then the Imperial War Machine will knock it over in 20 minutes. Maybe an hour if we're lucky.
Indeed, glorified fence was the best way to describe New Whitehall's defenses compared to actual strongholds. Fort Yemen's monumental walls, for instance, would have lasted days, maybe even weeks before the Empire broke through them with conventional siege warfare. Admittedly, a single Rancor had punched through those fortifications in an instant, but that had more to do with the absurd power of ultimate skills than some fault in the defense's construction.
That's still precious time where our troops will have the upper hand,
the elf pointed out.
I hear our side needs every edge it can get, no matter how expensive or wasteful it seems in the long run.
Such a crying shame, that. It pains me to see such good stone used so callously.
The old dwarf stroked the wall.
I suppose even achieving this level of stability is more or less a miracle, all things considered.
He spoke harshly about the state of the fortification because he was a perfectionist. He hated making compromises, but knew deep down it was necessary. Looking at the circumstances objectively, he had to admit the zeal that those legionnaires worked with was extraordinary. In all his years as an architect, Boneshutter had never seen so much rock and mortar move in such a short amount of time, let alone assembled into a barely passable excuse for a wall. This logistical feat was only possible because of the forest gate laying at the center of New Whitehall. That marvel of magical engineering allowed for the transfer of large amounts of materials and manpower across vast distances in a matter of seconds. There was a time and weight limit to how much could be transported per day, which was why the Republic also made use of the Skyfall River that ran west to east through the northern part of the city. That massive body of water that had a width of well over 200 meters served as a secure water route that ran within spitting distance of the capital. Additionally, it flowed in all the way from Cloudburst Mountain hundreds of kilometers to the north, which was the main source of the Republic's masonry materials. Having witnessed the elves' robust supply lines for himself, the old architect was finally able to understand something. Prior to accepting this job, he always wondered how the stonework in Azure Vale's stone district was of such high quality. Indeed, the dwarves living there erected many a structure that did their heritage proud. The secret lay in the source of their material. No stonemason worth their chisel would turn down the opportunity to work with blocks and bricks directly from the world's tallest mountain. Furthermore, the aquatic and magical means of transportation from the quarry to the building site were both smooth and safe. The risk of goods suffering damage, chips, or cracks in transit was practically non-existent. The sheer efficiency of the whole affair nearly made Boneshutter jealous. Even though his homeland, the Horkensaft Kingdom, had developed a miracle of technology called a magrail, it couldn't compete with the Ishigar Republic's forest gates. Then again, the same was true of the Lodrak Empire's griffins and the merchant fleets of the Sovereign States Alliance. As far as major players on this continent, the Republic was at the top when it came to infrastructure and logistics. This advantage was one of the key factors behind the Elven nation's economic prosperity. Of course, from the perspective of an honest craftsman like Boneshutter, such grand statements were difficult to trust or comprehend. However, not even the most cynical of skeptics could dispute the Republic's monetary might when faced with 3,520 meters worth of evidence defending New Whitehall's southern approach. The construction guild headed by the dwarven architect had been offered a very lucrative contract for overseeing the project. The seasoned builder had some doubts when his elf apprentice first brought him the contract, but he was glad he took it. Not only was the work well paid and challenging, but it was a learning experience as well. Prior to coming here, Boneshutter had no idea that elves liked to layer processed iron bark in between stone bricks. While the idea seemed mad at first glance, the technique greatly increased a structure's resistance to physical impacts. The major downside was that it was impossible to use this method without easy access to hilt trees. But the old dwarf didn't care. He was quietly thankful for the opportunity to expand on his own knowledge and expertise.
Yeah, Yeah, I've actually been wondering about that,
said Jesse, interrupting his introspective.
How come a city this big had absolutely no fortifications?
The gnome had only arrived in New Whitehall a little over a week ago and had spent every waking moment fervently working in her workshop alongside her 10 colleagues. Combined with her acute case of agoraphobia, she avoided going outside as much as possible. As such, her knowledge of the surrounding area was basically non-existent.
Ah, I can answer that, the apprentice chimed in. It's because there hasn't been a need for such things.
Wait, seriously?
Jesse doubted those words.
How come?
Because we're right in the middle of the Rainy Woodlands.
Well, duh.
Indeed, it was difficult for anyone to step outside the city without being instantly made aware of the slightly intimidating pine forest a few hundred meters from the walls.
What I'm asking is, how come the locals didn't set up defenses against monsters and such?
She elaborated.
Even a shut-in like me knows that's the most basic of basics.
I don't think that's something to be proud of,
the dwarf mumbled.
Ha! Ha ha!
The elf forced an awkward laugh.
I guess you don't know anything about the region after all.
The Rainy Woodlands is a land of dense wood that gets an above-average amount of rain. It's all there on the label. Speaking of which, what's up with the literal naming sense?
Don't get me wrong, I'm in favor of factual accuracy as much as the next artificer. But could you people have at least tried to make it creative?
I'm in full agreement, the apprentice chuckled. But this place is more boring than its name. The forest is a white spot, you see.
Wait, what? The entire forest?
Yep.
That massive sea of trees?
Indeed.
All of it?
Yes, all of it is a white spot,
the dwarf yelled, clearly annoyed.
Now shut your trap, you bloody cow.
Unbelievable,
Jesse mumbled while ignoring those harsh words.
I had no idea white spots could get that huge.
Well, it's not really an artificer's area of expertise, is it?
Offered the elf.
No, I suppose not.
A white spot referred to an area utterly devoid of ambient mana. Such places held no alchemical herbs, magical minerals, or other exotic materials. It was also the main reason why there wasn't a single hilt tree in the entire forest. On the other hand, the unmagical nature of the land meant that there effectively wasn't a monster population. A few magical beasts might wander into it in search of easy prey, but they never ventured deep enough to reach New Whitehall. Even the more mundane predators, such as bears and wolves, were a rarity. The most common danger in the Rainy Woodlands was running across a band of outlaws trying to eke out a meager living in the wilderness. It was hardly a threat serious enough to warrant permanent fortifications. Even so, this region was quite valuable in terms of basic natural resources. The land was fertile, filled with timber of good quality and overwhelming quantity, abundant in game and fish, and the hills were rich with iron, copper, and coal. Calling it a lucrative region was an understatement, though the Republic avoided aggressively exploiting it for fear of damaging the environment. Not only out of respect for nature, but also because the Rainy Woodlands was a national treasure, a vast area of peace and tranquility in an otherwise brutal world. The Empire was far less concerned with such things, however, and merely wanted a source of fuel for its war machine.
Come on, then!
The dwarf urged the other two.
We still have 2 kilometers of walls to survey, and I want to be done in time for my afternoon pint.
It is as you say, master.
The apprentice instantly fell in line.
Great! More walking and staring at rocks.
The gnome's sarcastic attitude made Boneshutter punch the wall so hard that his hand started bleeding.
By my grandfather's hairy knuckles! Why are you even here, girl?
His frustration exploded.
You've done nothing but complain since we started. You clearly don't want to be here, so why don't you kindly fuck right off?
Trust me, I would if I could.
She groaned.
Unfortunately, this is business.
What sort of business does a dainty-wristed little widget spinner like you possibly have with my wall?
I'm surveying the completed fortifications for a good place to lay down a minefield.
This was the main reason she had to come out personally. It was a vital duty she couldn't entrust to those bolts for brains she had brought with her. Or at least, that's what she told herself. Deep down, she would have gladly delegated this to someone else, but the Republic military, her current employer, demanded her personal oversight.
"Oh, what?"
the dwarf asked, his confusion dousing his anger.
"A minefield,"
Jessie repeated herself.
"As in, a field full of landmines."
"Do I really need to point out how stupid it is to dig a mine anywhere near here?"
The gnome rolled her eyes once more.
"Not that kind of mine, you old fart. I'm talking about the traps that me and my colleagues have been working on. Wonderful little things, you know. You bury them just beneath the soil, wait for a human to step on it, and kablooey, no more human."
"Incredible," the elf exclaimed. "And you say this mechanism targets humans specifically?"
"Well, no, not exactly."
Her smile wavered.
"Us gnomes will be fine, but, let's just say you might want to lose a couple dozen kilograms before you go for any long walks around town."
"Ah."
That was the only noise the elf could muster before he started rapidly reconsidering his employment options.
"Bah! You gnomes are just as crazy as ever,"
the dwarf grumbled.
"Fine, do what you want. Just keep your opinions to yourself and your faulty junk away from my wall. Come, apprentice. We have real work to do."
"Hey!"
Jessie shook her tiny fist.
"I told you to stop calling it faulty junk."
The three of them continued bickering as the lead architect personally verified the structural integrity of the wall every 50 meters or so. Some parts were naturally weaker than others, as inconsistency was a major pitfall of rushed construction jobs such as this. Boneshutter made sure to note those locations in the small brown notebook he always carried with him. He looked forward to showing them to that pompous legate with an I-told-you-so attitude. But it was also information that Jessie needed to take into consideration when doing her own job. After all, the last thing she wanted was to have her explosives collapse the very wall they were intended to defend. The gnome was far less concerned with the ground's soil composition. It didn't matter if it was dirt, sand, or mud, so long as it could be dug up. She was confident her babies would function even after being submerged in a swamp for years on end. The location of the minefield was far more important than the terrain. Thus, her attention was directed at the deforested area between the glorified fence and the surrounding tree line. It was a mostly bare stretch 100 to 200 meters wide. She had to figure out how to place the hundreds of explosive traps at her disposal in a way that maximized casualties while minimizing collateral damage to Allied forces. That was easier said than done. Jessie's knowledge of warfare and military tactics was purely theoretical. Then again, so was the idea of using minefields in armed conflict. After all, it had been barely more than a century since the artificer job came into existence. The craft was still undergoing fervent development, and there were plenty of unexplored practical applications. The designs that Jessie worked with were only 3 years old and still considered experimental. Very few people were familiar with landmines, and practically nobody knew how to fully utilize them in a military engagement. The same could be said of all artificer-made weaponry, but pressure-triggered anti-personnel explosives were especially obscure. Only an organization as rich and desperate as the Republic would consider employing such a thing. However, if anyone could be considered the leading expert in the field of minefields, it was Jessiewick Wobblebang.
"Huh? Did anyone else hear that?"
she asked suddenly.
"Hear what?" the elf asked.
"Never mind."
For a moment there, Jessie forgot that her senses were quite a bit sharper than those of the two blockheads with her. That aside, the faint tune in the wind had momentarily derailed her thoughts. She strained her ears even more and stared out towards the edge of the rainy woodlands in an attempt to locate the source of that disturbance. Several seconds later, she spotted an armed group of a few dozen people emerge from the tree line. She barely made out their uniforms, which resembled her own. They were obviously a scouting party returning to base. Less obvious, however, was the reason they sang in the first place. As they jogged closer to the city's perimeter, her questions only increased. For one thing, why did they sound so damn cheery even though they had clearly seen combat? What was the deal with that purely white, gnome-sized thing glistening in the afternoon sun with unparalleled radiance?
Oh, do you know the Muffin Man, the Muffin Man, the Muffin Man?
What in the world could produce an odd voice like that?
Do you know the Muffin Man that lives inside my head?
Which loony bin thought up those lyrics?
Oh, yes, we know the Muffin Man, the Muffin Man, the Muffin Man. Now we know the Muffin Man that lives inside your head.
Last but not least, why in Goroth's rocky gonads were the rest of those guys singing along in a chorus? The stupefied gnome turned her head to the side, only to realize that both the elf and the dwarf were completely ignoring the spectacle. Were their heads so filled with rocks that they still didn't hear the procession? No, the way the dwarf shook his head and muttered something about bloody gnomes indicated that he was already remarkably familiar with this sight and was ignoring it on purpose. The elf seemed to share this point of view, though he was a bit more polite about it.
Excuse me?
She squeaked out.
But what is that?
Though the architect stubbornly ignored her, his far more agreeable apprentice looked down at the little woman, then turned his gaze towards the direction she was pointing.
Oh, that's just the Juggernaut Squad. They keep singing that song every time they enter or leave the city.
The blonde, blue-eyed gnome scanned the merry men and women as they steadily approached the gatehouse further ahead of her.
What Juggernaut? I don't see any...
It's the short white one.
The elf anticipated her confusion.
No way. Surely someone with a name like that should be, like, 3 meters tall and half as wide and have arms the size of tree trunks. What kind of false advertising is this? If this was Horkensaft, you'd get sued right into poverty.
Well, I know it's hard to believe, but the Rust Blood Juggernaut is none other than her. Well, I think it's a her. Might be an it. Not too sure how that works with golems.
A golem? In the Republic military?
Oh, yeah. A mithril one. She's also an artificer like you, and a paladin to boot. Way I heard it, she used to be a... Hey! Where are you going?
The hyperactive gnome sprinted off in the direction of that squad before the elf finished his explanation.
You can't just run up to a military unit like that!
He shouted after her.
Leave her be, lad.
The old stonemason shook his head.
We have a job to do, and it doesn't involve dealing with gnomish shenanigans.
Understood, master.
Fizzy's squad piped down as they approached one of the three large gatehouses in the newly established perimeter. Although their uniforms were similar to those of other legionaries, the three vertical lines on their shoulders marked them as officially belonging to the 3rd Legion. Their legate sent 4,000 of his own forces to shore up the 10,000-strong 2nd Legion, drastically increasing their odds at repelling the inbound Imperial troops. The group's commanding officer, a hardened elf bearing the title of Optio, stepped forward and identified himself to the gatekeepers. The steel portcullis slowly raised to allow the returning soldiers entry. The troops lined up and waited patiently for the scribe on duty to confirm their identities using basic appraisal. It was a standard security measure to weed out any spies and infiltrators, which took a few minutes. Afterwards, the squad would be allowed inside the city proper in order to rest, resupply, rearm, and reinforce while they awaited new orders. This particular unit had already earned a fearsome reputation among local forces, even though they had only seen combat 3 times since their transfer from the West. They stood out because they completed their assignments with only minor casualties, none of which were fatalities. This stellar track record could be attributed to the fact that they were all veteran combatants, but a huge part of their ongoing success was the terrifying strength and potent healing magic of a certain paladin. Idle onlookers might consider the Mithril Golem some kind of ornament or mascot, but to the men and women in her unit, she was their guardian angel. Admittedly, Fizzy only fulfilled that role as part of her social obligations, but she knew better than to tell anyone that.
Wait!
The sudden, high-pitched scream caused the entire half-platoon to raise their guard and turn their attention to the right. They relaxed somewhat when they recognized the approaching stranger's uniform and identified her as one of countless independent contractors assisting with the defensive fortifications. The blonde-haired gnome ran as if the god of death and taxes himself chased her. She kept up her mad dash right until she skidded to a halt in front of Fizzy. The tiny blonde grasped both of the paladin's shoulders while she caught her breath. This provoked a tiny twitch out of the corner of the golem's shimmering eyes. Who did this pathetic meatbag think she was to so brazenly sully Fizzy's glorious frame with those greasy hands? It took a monumental amount of effort, but the shiny construct kept herself from ripping those blasphemous digits off and shoving them up their owner's exhaust port. While it would have been immensely gratifying, Fizzy didn't want to disappoint Boxy by failing to play nice with the Republic meatbags. Jessie, on the other hand, stared at her own feet and panted heavily from what she'd just put herself through. She had gotten a bit overexcited and sprinted all the way here. It was a terrible idea in retrospect. Sweat dripped from her forehead, her legs trembled, her head felt dizzy, and her breakfast wanted to come up for an encore. Her body was complaining as vehemently as it could that it wasn't used to such bursts of physical exertion. She probably would have already collapsed if she wasn't leaning heavily against Fizzy.
"Another one, huh?"
mumbled a nearby soldier.
"I mean, what did you expect?"
said another with a chuckle.
"This sort of thing happens every time Fizzy goes out in public."
"Yeah, but you'd think people would be used to her by now."
"Well, I don't know, man. I see her almost every day, and I still can't stop staring at her sometimes."
"Yeah, can't argue with that."
"Enough chit-chat,"
shouted the officer in charge.
"Appraisals are done, so go get your gear checked in for repairs and get some rest. You'll be needing it."
The troops saluted in a course of,
"Yes, sir,"
and started filing through the gatehouse in earnest.
"Fizzle Sprocket, you, do what you gotta do. Just be there for the debriefing in 10.
"Sir."
Fizzy responded like the others, prompting her commanding officer to turn around and walk away while maintaining a stern expression of, "I didn't see anything." With the rest of the squad orderly retreating, the golem turned her attention to the gnome still leaning on her. At some point, her blonde head leaned so low that it was currently pressing against the golem's bosom. Fizzy, in her twisted mindset, interpreted that gesture as a somewhat inappropriate compliment. After all, she couldn't blame this blondie for thinking that her chest ornaments were a soft and fluffy place to lean on when they looked the part. Indeed, though their size wasn't all that impressive, the golem's girls had a supple and appealing shape that even the most plebeian meatbag could appreciate. They were practically works of art, just like the rest of her. At least in Fizzy's totally unbiased and flawlessly objective opinion. It was one of the reasons she felt it a damned shame that she didn't get to exhibit her assets more often. Baseless self-praise aside, the sorry sack of meat still clung to her shoulders and fogged up her sparkly frame with that disgusting breath, which was grinding the golem's gears.
Can I help you with something?"
Fizzy asked through a strained smile. Jessie, who had somewhat caught her breath, looked up with a face that was way too excited for her own good.
"I want to feel your insides."
That shameless, full-volume declaration was perhaps not the best way to express her academic interest in the fascinating construct before her. The soldiers, still within earshot, couldn't help but giggle audibly as they vacated the area. As for Fizzy, she let out a drawn-out metallic groan that sounded as if someone had passed out on a pipe organ's keyboard. She raised her loosely clenched fist to the impertinent meatbag's forehead and flicked her index finger against it. Though seemingly small, it packed enough force to knock the female gnome over in spectacular fashion. Her small body spun around, ass over shoulders, sending her consciousness flying south for the winter, while the rest of her face planted in the grass-covered dirt. Fizzy continued through the open gate, while muttering something about bloody gnomes under her breath. Part 3.